Thank you all for being here today. I haven't done my vocal exercises this morning, so I can feel my voice is sounding a little bit ragged, but the place it's speaking from is not ragged at all. It's funny, I feel like I have so much to say and so much of it's been said, and yet it feels so urgent. The line that pops into my head is one of the biggest problems in our spiritual life. And it's the line, I am spiritual. There's a huge problem in that concept. I am a spiritual person. Even I am a good person, or I'm a loving person, or I am a terrible person, or I'm an idiot, or whatever lines you use to define yourself. Calling yourself a spiritual person is sort of hierarchical. Putting yourself up here. I'm an idiot somewhere down here. Whatever it is, it's a containment. It locks you into an idea of yourself. And locks in is the wrong word because it changes by the minute. But it keeps putting you into categories. And you're not really ultimately able to be categorized. The minute you give yourself a form, a name, an identity, a box to fit in, it's you who did that. It's really not who you are. It's not what you are. And yet we live our whole lives contained in an idea of ourself, in a story of ourself, in a limited, tightly wrapped, often insufferable concept of self. The truth in the line, I am spiritual, are the first two words, I am. It comes from, in its larger narrative sense, be still and know that I am God. There's a lot of teaching in that. Be still is an important part. Know is an important part. And I am is an essential part. I am God makes you think that be still and know that something out there is God that you should approach and worship. But it doesn't say that. It says, be still and know that I am God. Often it's shortened, and I have a plaque in my house, two of them actually, because I had it in two houses and we're now in one. And it just says, be still and know that I am. Most of us measure ourselves by something I've been talking about a lot in the last weeks, which is this reactivity to stimuli, to our surroundings. And this I am becomes that responsiveness, that reactivity. I am a happy person. I am a sad person. I am a doctor. I am a meditator. I am a lawyer, a husband, a wife, whatever you think you are. And then all of the variabilities that go into that second by second, moment by moment, they keep you locked into this package. And when you set to meditate, this idea of stillness is trying to let you free yourself for a minute of reinforcing this sense of separate self, this identity. And if you get very quiet and very still inside, it kind of falls away. There's a relaxation of reactivity. You're not reacting to very much. You're mostly reacting to the quiet of the day, the stillness inside you. It's a very nice, calm feeling. Not that something can't come up at any given second and lock you back into your package, but for those moments, it's very quiet. And in a meditative practice, there's a objective, and that objective is to go inside yourself, to stop being involved with the world around you that contextualizes you, and go into this deeper space. Going inside for many people is a different experience individually. How do you go inside? Well, mostly it's through feeling. You feel your way in. And when I say feeling, there's a whole body that we inhabit that is not a outer related body so much as it is an experiential body. And that body feels life. And in its most obvious form, it's sexual. So if you can imagine lying naked and being touched, and we all have these zones, of course, that turn us on, that get us really kind of excited. These are deep feelings. If people touch you in certain spaces, you have a feeling reaction, not a mental thought reaction, not some kind of fear runaway reaction. It's usually like, it deepens you, it goes into you. And as you feel these things, you are in your feeling body. And those feelings can go very deep. In a sexualized sense, they start to want expression outwardly. You want orgasmic experience, but in the deepest place, it's a kind of indrawing experience. You kind of go deeper and deeper into the beauty and the joy of the feeling of being mostly touched. Touched on your breasts, on your earlobes, on your forehead, on your genitals, on your feet, on whatever works for you. You have all of these spaces that react to sensory stimuli. When you sit still in meditation, you are also waiting to be touched. When you have a teacher, this is a person who you have given permission to touch you. And if that person is open and guided and not misguided or egoistic, they will learn how to and where to touch you. And when you sit really deeply still, you will feel touched. You will feel your heart open. You will feel a freedom of personality and of being in your throat. You will feel a head experience that is expansive and beautiful. You will feel genitally awake. You will feel touched at the base of your very being. You will feel this intuition space right below your navel. You will feel touched in these spaces, and they will really, really be expansive to the degree that you surrender. If you're going, oh, no, don't touch me there, that's an obstruction. If you're saying, don't touch me at all, it's an obstruction. And many of you are doing that. And a really good teacher knows when not to go somewhere, or knows an avenue that will break down your resistance to being a feeling entity. And they find a way, a good teacher finds a way past your barriers, past your obstruction, past your no, don't touch me, and finds a way to this place where you go, and you suddenly have been made aware of the joy and the possibility that you have in you. And it is an exquisite reality. The feeling body is really essential to this meditative experience. The thinking body is really not valuable in that experience. Not that it can't come into play. It can have a kind of, oh, recognition. Oh, that's this. Oh. It's pretty much the full value of a thinking body. The ego body, coming from your throat chakra, has a me aspect. So, oh, I am being touched. Oh, I'm getting this. Oh, there's this value for me. Oh, this is wonderful. Oh, I feel spiritual. Oh, I feel open. Oh, I feel I. And the danger in that is that it is increasing the egoistic being when the whole idea is to transcend and go beyond that. So trying to relax the throat chakra is really a key element in this spiritual journey, because the idea is not to own the experience, it's to be the experience. Let this happen to you. Let yourself be embraced by something greater. Let this vastness of opening that starts to occur deep in these chakra centers and starts to expand way beyond your body. And you start to go, oh, you are somehow not limited by the definition of your physical self. There is something else going on here. You are moving onward beyond the idea of you. And as you start to do that, even if it's just inches away from your physical body, you're already anointed. You're already aware that you are not limited by this being. Things start to happen in meditative experience that a lot of people leave on the table in the experience when it's over. They go, oh, that was beautiful. Now I have to go back into the day-to-day life. Go back into the container. Go back into the person I think I am, that I know I am, that has this long story and all of these reactions to everything in the world. But really, you don't have to do that. You can really leave all of that personal stuff out of the picture and just come back with this sense of a global, non-embodied reality. It takes training to do that. And as Rudy said so repeatedly, a lifetime, because we're not good at it. We are very good at repeating patterns of reactivity, of how we struggle and deal with the world. But when this feeling body starts to go really deep and deep, or as Nityananda used to say, go into your heart and roam, go on adventures. It's vast, it's massive. When you start to go into that space, and then you start to keep your consciousness aware of that as you re-enter this materialized space, there is this remarkable balance between the inner and the outer. And as you let that happen, this reactivity starts to show itself to you. And you go, oh, for example, you get angry at your spouse for something that they do or did or that they do all the time. And it's caused a reaction. That again. Why do they do that? What's that? Whatever that thing is. And then with your inner development, you see yourself do that. You go, oh, look at that. You just patterned that reaction over and over for the millionth time, and something in you suddenly goes, I don't have to do that. And you go, Rudy's idea, take a breath, ask for help to let go, and you do. And that reaction falls away. And you discover that you have just become a little bit liberated from your patterning, from your repetitive nature. And then you do it a little bit more and a little bit more. And what takes place is you discover your inner directive, your inner voice, your inner feeling body relaxes and lets go of your outer reactive body. And there is this expanding awareness, peace, joy, well-being, or just being without reaction. Now, of course, you are programmed to have a lot of reactions. And it's almost like you have to go one after another, which is not a bad training ground. But there's a lot of stuff there in this programming that makes you you. So practicing that is good, but what starts to happen, and trust me on this, the mere practice of it allows this inner ha to begin to take over. This inner directive starts to really express itself, and you become very receptive to the possibility at any given second that you can let go of something. And then, in this miraculous transference, it starts to let go for you. You're not doing anything. It just is happening and happening and happening. To make it personal again, and I go back to this period that I'm in, which I have talked about, this Neptunian period and this real arrival at something, I guess you call it, on a spiritual journey, what has really occurred and is being celebrated in my own psyche is love has revealed itself as a permanent condition. Kindness has appeared as a permanent condition. Goodness has arrived. It has never not been there. It's always been in the background, but my reactivity always kept me somehow separate. And I don't know the how or the why. That's been described as an astrological event, and partly it was a pain event in my physiological body, which I've talked about in classes recently. Something happened that burned away the reactivity and let me realize that I am the love body itself. I am kindness and goodness itself. I don't have to work at it except on occasion. Mostly I just have to, I don't have to do anything. Just be. And there it is. And I know from the experience of it that it's there for you too. That it's not, there's no one. There is no one who doesn't have this available. The only thing that stands in the way is ignorance, failure to reach for it, to have a practice, to have an expression of need or desire to have it. All of those things are crucial to finding liberation. You can't just wander into it or back into it. It won't happen. It takes a real concerted effort, and a concerted effort, as Rudy would say, over time, and Rudy's equation was effort over time. You just keep doing this, you will get good at it, meaning there won't be anybody who's actually good at it. The person who was good at it falls away, and the goodness itself stays. The other day I woke up in a really bad mood, and I looked at it as a sign of failure. How could I, who feels so much love and kindness and goodness, feel such a sour mood? And then this thing said, why are you reacting to it? Why do you think it's your mood? It's a mood. You don't, it's not yours. Let go. I went, oh, who knew? And I let go. And it wasn't my mood at all. It was just a mood that floated through and floated away. We have that all the time, guys. We have all these things that come up and go, oh God, why that again? You just grabbed onto it. That's why. It arose and you enveloped it. You bought into it and you don't have to. This practice that Rudy gave us, which is pretty mechanical, take a breath, hold it inside, ask for help to surrender, is actually a good work. But in time, it's gentler. And in time, it just keeps teaching you. And it just keeps saying, it's okay. Aso. You just relax. You let it be. And things will come and go. Things you want that you don't get, things you do get that you didn't want. I mean, all these strange things go on and you just look at it and go. So I don't exactly know what I have arrived at in myself. It has a certain authority, but I'll tell you what it doesn't have. It's not hierarchical. It in no way makes me better than or different than anybody else. It's just the opposite. It brings you unbelievable humility because it's just who we all are. And then you look at everybody else who doesn't know that, and your only desire is to say, it's available and it's worth it. It's worth every bit of it. And then you watch the depths of ignorance in almost everybody, including yours truly. You watch the depths of ignorance and then you see what is resisting that. And if you're lucky and you commit to this, it will free you and free you and free you. And at some point, I sense this true liberation is there. And I, at this moment in time, am very much arriving at I am. And if I was to add a predicate to that, instead of I am, I would go, I am nothing. That's what I would say. I am nothing. I mean, there's some Bruce stuff, of course. There's a body and a history and a memory and all that stuff, but hardly comes into play. I am whatever is unfolding and whatever is in front of me. And this love that comes into play flows out into that, as does the kindness and the goodness. And I'm learning lessons upon lessons. And one of them was on Thanksgiving. And one person in this entire class, not to give any of you guilt, but one person in the entire class reached out to say, Happy Thanksgiving. And I went, it felt so good to be thought of and remembered. And then I felt like, oof. It feels bad not to be thought of and remembered by everybody else. And I teach everybody kindness and goodness and love, and nobody expressed kindness, goodness, or love. I went, well, I can sit here and be unhappy or angry or whatever, and this voice in me said, no, express kindness and goodness and love. And I went right to my computer, and I sent a thank you note to all of you to express on Thanksgiving how thankful I was for you. It felt so good to do that, to do the teaching, not to be a teacher who tells you what to do, do it, and then watch what happens. And of course, the greetings that came back were lovely and beautiful, and I didn't need them at all, truly. I felt my Thanksgiving was so filled with gratitude that I didn't need anybody at all. On the other hand, everything that arrived was greeted with great joy. But I realized the teaching is be the teaching. If you think other people should do something, don't tell them to do it. Be that. And if the teaching is working, it will clarify itself. It will rise up in the consciousness of every student, and they will learn to begin to be good, be kind, be loving. Period. That's the teaching. That is the core essence of all of this. And as I say week by week, I have become Dalai Lama-like in that is his teaching. And I don't know what else to teach you. Be this thing. Be a good person. Be a kind person, expansively so. Wherever you can, share it and give it and radiate that. And as you do that, you will start to see these voices in you going, but what about me? And that's where you get in trouble. That's the defining reactive person that needs to be surrendered. And how do you surrender it? You go, please help me to surrender and let it go. And as it goes through practice, you get freed of that. And at some point, there is nobody there reacting. And what fills that non-reactive space is whatever wants to arise out of nothingness. So a big part of the journey is the recognition that there's nothing there, and then stuff comes out of it. But as I've said now, week by week, my discovery is what rises out of nothingness, first and foremost, is love. And then that love finds attachments or places to go, which is, it can be every tree you see walking down the street, it can be the dog barking, it can be a car driving by. I mean, I cannot tell you how much love happens, but the core of the love goes to the person you're with, assuming you're with someone. I am, with great gratitude, with Blanche. And I cannot love her enough. And I watch how that works. It's just, it has nothing to do with me or the story or anything. It's just, she is the center of my being, of my life, the partner in it. Some of you have partners, some of you don't have partners. If you don't have a partner and that love doesn't have someone to go to, let it just go to the world itself. Let it go to whoever appears in your scheme of things. Let it go to people who've passed on. Some of you have had lovers who and partners who have gone on. You can love them as much as ever. You will also miss them, and that's the feeling body, and that's very powerful. But as that comes, you don't have to go, oh, that hurts. You just watch the dynamic of love and loss that is so powerful in life, and it will free you to allow it to be rather than to reject it or to find some reaction to it. Just be that, and there is this remarkable sense of what being feels like. And you go back into that feeling body, which can become very intense. And the more you surrender to the feeling body, the less there is a reacting being. It's just happening. It's filling time and space. It's remarkable. I will alert you, and you all know this, that there is a physical body, and that physical body has feelings that are joyous and are very painful. And when they get very painful, you will have a different series of reactions. Your reactivity will become programmable, programmed actually, and there's nothing much you can do about it. You can try to look at it as there's no me, but when you're biologically constructed, there is a lot of the me factor, and that's going to take more work in your life than anything else. When you are in pain, emotional or physical, that's when this practice becomes really, really hard and really valuable. But until that moment, or those moments, the practice is not that hard. It's just don't react programmably to everything that happens in your life. Just relax and open and surrender and find gratitude and be good and be thankful and be kind. And you will find that your life will no longer be about you, no longer be about making you special. It will be about everyone else and realizing that everyone else is you, and that loving them is the greatest, most wonderful component of the human experience. That's what we're here for. If you can follow this out, play with this journey that we're on, the spiritual journey. Don't make it about you becoming a special person or a better person or higher up the ladder than somebody else. It's none of that. There's no ladder. There's nothing to get to. There's no one in charge. The guru is you. Trust me. The ultimate teacher is you. You can reject a teacher or you can buy into a teacher, but ultimately the real teaching is like right here in you. The best teachers in the world help you find that. That's all they do. They just help you. And if they do that, you will find that space in yourself, which will be very grateful to the teacher, but the teacher does not need your gratitude. They are so filled with gratitude, nothing more can be added to the equation. The joy of being is where we're headed. The amazement of being is where we're headed. The gratitude for being, the awe and wonder of being, that's where we're headed. And if you are not in that space, there's work to do. And don't box yourself into, oh, I'm no good, or I'm not capable, or why him and not me, and all. If you do that, you're just back into the program. And if you back into your own program, okay. But somewhere along the way, either you work your way out of that, or the universe will rip it away, probably on your deathbed, or afterward in the Bardo state, if you follow the Tibetan teaching. It's got to get ripped away. I will try to encourage you. Let it go now. Let it go. It's easier. It's just so much easier. Let it go. Find that open-hearted, open-bellied, open-minded self and just let yourself go and let the universe step in. And it will. And you will know it's there because you're in a state of love and gratitude all the time. That's it. I don't know what more to add to this. So if any of you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. If any of you did not listen to last week's talk, you probably should, because for me it was a really important transformative moment to finally express myself to the world personally. And I really am touching something, becoming the thing we are all seeking. And again, I will tell you, it doesn't make you special. If becoming nothing is special, then it makes you special. But you're just becoming nothing. And it's the best possible place to find yourself. Again, any questions? Okay. Well, then I will just say, I love you guys. I truly love you guys. And I thank you for showing up. Next week, it'll be the East Coast class again. So it'll be this group. And those of you who are from the West Coast, who I love seeing on the East Coast, thank you for showing up. And nothing but gratitude for you all.
Bruce, is it too late to ask a question?
No, not really. Where's that coming
from? From Daniel.
Daniel, okay.
Hi. So I guess just... well, you know, and I don't mean this to make this too intellectual, but on the spiritual journey, especially one that you so eloquently described, I feel like it's not much different than a lot of things Rudy would teach about surrendering and sort of opening to one's own nothingness and love and gratitude. And I've been interested in this documentary series on Scientology that's been on Netflix, been watching it a bit. And there's certain things within that kind of clearly a cult at this point that have elements of like non-reactivity and, you know, going clear, like going beyond reactivity in these things, using a lot of the same language. And without naming names, you know, there's some examples of students of Rudy's that went on to become very charismatic teachers that have a kind of a cultish aspect and doesn't really seem to embody a sense of nothingness or love. And so my question is, if you could talk about pitfalls of authentically embodying this journey, but also the possibility for spiritual bypassing. I don't know if you're familiar with that word, or you know what I mean? Like how the other, I guess, people that have been practicing spiritual practices for many years, sometimes they've found that they're bypassing basic psychological aspects of their lives through this terminology of, you know, not really fully embodying their emotions and actually living an authentic human experience that there. And then that comes through, and sometimes that kind of gets pent up, and then it comes through in really unhealthy ways in different styles. And so I was just hoping you could address potential pitfalls of how one can actually use the teachings, but diverge into, you know, the wrong direction, so to speak.
Well, I mean, in a way, you've just pinpointed a lot of that. But, you know, the first problem, as far as I can tell, is ownership. And you have a spiritual transformation or awakening or levels that seem like levels, a little bit more and a little bit this. And you find yourself becoming identified with that. And that you get certain capacities like open-heartedness so that you can love people and control people through love. Your mind opens up and you can see into the weaknesses of people's minds, and you can use that to control people and to control yourself, and to not control yourself, but to convince yourself that you have arrived somewhere. The mere fact that you think there is someone who's going to benefit on any level from spiritual practice is where you're going to go off route. There is no one to benefit. The real awakening, as far as I can tell, has no one there. You do not awaken to how great you are or how high up on the ladder you are or how special you are. You awaken to the fact that you are nothing. There's nothing. And if you want to know true humility, and it's not a humbleness that you manifest, it's there because you are nothing. The minute there's a you that comes into the picture, you have automatically stepped away from the vastness of truth and being. You have controlled it, embodied it, and somehow owned it in a way that will diminish you. And the biggest, most successful spiritual teachers that I have seen who become cult-like in their domination of their students create phenomenal destruction in people's journeys. And people who own their own achievement, even in those cult-like situations, find themselves locked into, in a way, a prison that looks like a palace, but it's a prison. And you have to work your way out of it. And if you think you're defined by your achievement and your attainment and your specialness, that's your reaction to all of this. You become somebody who thinks you are somehow transcendent, somehow attained, somehow achieved. And I have to say, having met some of those people, I am very aware from what I am experiencing that if you take ownership of any of it, if you think it's going to carry you past stuff you need to get or do because now you're special, you will be screwed up, because you have to let go of the totality of your sense of self, of reactivity. But what I am finding in my own journey, which is quite fascinating to me, is there is a dance that you do where you're a partner in it until the lead dancer takes over. And then you don't do very much. You just twist this way, turn that way, and it will be the most beautiful dance on the floor, because you do nothing but respond to the, I mean, even saying you respond is a mistake, because there's no you responding. There's just happening. There's just being. And occasionally being is doing while you're still in a body and alive. But until you can really, it makes it look like you do something. My experience, Daniel, is it's happening in spite of Bruce, in a way. It's just happening. And Bruce is so grateful to step out of the way and not be there. Even coming to sit and teach class and pontificate about all this stuff, I have no need to do it. I am here to serve something, and that's what I'm doing. And I'm doing the best job that this particular mind-body construct can do. But you know, I'm finding a certain completion. If you sidestep certain things and try to pretend them away, like you are secretly coveting something or someone, or that you have done bad things that you don't want to acknowledge, or if you have complex sexuality, the way I was describing things last week, you have to expose, let go, free yourself of all of that stuff, and then you do it with the aid of your inner directive. And after a while, you realize what you are serving is so beyond anything the mind can conjure, anything that can be understood, that the goal of understanding and putting it into perspective falls away. All of the rules, all the lineages, all the lines of contact that tell you this, you do this, and that blessing will happen, and you do this, and that will happen, all that goes away. And there is nothing but surrender. And there's not even a person to surrender. So there's just being. And that's, God knows, a simplistic version of it. But when I say just being, you cannot just be without witnessing creation. And if you witness creation without being obsessed by it, wanting to possess it, being angry at it, being fearful of it, if you witness creation from a place of being, you will find yourself falling to the ground in awe and wonder, because it is beyond imagining. Whatever this is so wildly brilliant and extraordinary and beyond our conceptualization. We can try to capture its beauty. We can try to capture its truth. We can try to reflect its goodness and kindness. That's the best we can do. But I'm telling you, anybody who uses this for their own anything is still trapped by their idea of self in a manifested world. And liberation and freedom and awakening is that all goes away. Does that even touch on anything you asked? I don't know. I mean, you may have more particular things in that space, but it's a hard one to get at. I can just tell you this. There's no real shortcuts, and there's no real, if you become elevated by any of this, then it's not the right path. There's nothing to make you better than anybody. Nothing. There is no moment where you will be better than anybody. Nor will you be worse. You will just be the same thing everybody is. And if everybody was awake, they would know it. And when you share awakening with other people, it's exquisite and rare.
Thank you, Bruce.
I held your attention for way too long. It looks like it's gone on forever. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for drawing this into your psyche. It's worth it. It is worth it. That's the only thing I can say. And if you want help along the way, or affirmation, or guidance, I think that's what I'm doing here. And you know, you don't need me, really. You really don't. On the other hand, I'm not sure I could have gotten here without Rudy. So, you know, you get what you get. And everyone who's listening to these words has been, in my mind, brought here by some higher force because they are ready, you are ready to know what is being said and to respond to it in some fundamental way. You're all on the doorstep of just freeing yourself from the dramas and the illusions of the worldly life. It doesn't take worldly life away. It makes it all the more beautiful, really. It's like you can't believe it day by day. So thank you again. Go do what you want to do today. Those of you who are anywhere in this area, it's gorgeous out. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the day and lots of love. And we'll see you next week.